Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, and you're listening to episode 28 of Tech to Go. First, I would like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about Windows 7, what we should be thinking about there, the new Intact CPA to Biz relationship, and a little bit about Verizon's new Hub phone that we've been seeing advertised for home use. I'm Darren Root, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor magazine, and I have our regular co-host today, Randy Johnston. Randy's a principal with K2 Enterprises, and Randy's coming to us today from Savannah, Georgia. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Also with us today is Renee Lassert. Renee's the CEO of Bill.com, and Renee's out on the West Coast. Welcome, Renee.
Good morning, all. Great to be here.
And Dave McClure. Dave's the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Things in Washington okay?
Things are fine, except it's a little rainy out here today.
Yeah, we're getting that here in southern Indiana as well. Well, welcome to all you gentlemen. I'm looking forward to today's show. So let's just get started. Randy, I'm going to actually start with you. I want you to tell us a little bit about Windows 7 that we've been reading about.
Happy to do so. And in fact, it was probably lucky for us that over the last 48 hours or so that Microsoft actually announced their official release candidate date for Windows 7. Release Candidate 1 will be out on Tuesday, May 5th. It has actually been downloadable for some people, and they've decided to put the thing into a full public beta at that time. And when you have a release candidate like that, that's actually a really good thing, because that means that Microsoft believes that they've got the product feature ready, and what they're doing is testing it just to see if there's any issues with that. Normally, once a release candidate is approved, and there's usually one, two, or three versions that are done, then it is actually released to manufacturing, and we see the product about 90 days after release to manufacturing. So the next key milestone to watch for in terms of actual delivery of Windows is what the release to manufacturing date is. But with Release Candidate 1, that means we've got a feature complete version that's ready for us to test on.
Can you kind of, I haven't followed Windows 7 a lot at this point. Can you kind of give us an overview of what Windows 7 is all about versus Vista versus what we're leaving with XP?
Well, and of course, there's been a large amount of press about why people have skipped Vista and why they're going directly to Windows 7. But Windows 7 is really, from the way I've seen it, and I've been using it now about 4 months, a tuned-up version of Windows. I think the user interface in Windows 7 is easier to use than the ones that we've seen from the prior versions. There's actually a pretty strong business case for the skip that people have done, but what we're going to see in Windows 7 is higher performance. We'll see a little easier to use interface. The lady that's actually in charge of this particular release and experience, Julie Larson Green, has actually been responsible for the user experience with Office 2007. So a lot of the Windows 7 attributes are similar to what we've experienced inside Office 2007. It is a complete, in Office 2007, we had a complete departure from the old menu systems. Vista and Windows 7 are very similar to each other, but there's new usability features like the jump file toolbar, which you can basically point to the Windows, let's say, Word application or Excel application, and it'll show you in the menu structure the files that you've used most recently, so you can actually launch the appropriate file with the application through a toolbar. There's also a maintenance piece that's included in the toolbar to let you know you have patches or things like that to apply. And when you're running applications, you actually get a preview of the applications with the Windows Aero interface inside Windows 7. So in my use of it, I'm really thinking the user experience is so much better that I will convert to the release candidate and run that as my production system as soon as I can. Probably the only caveat on the release candidate one release is that it has to be installed, not upgraded from the prior versions of Windows 7, so the one that was released earlier this year. And at this point, we have not seen any applications that have a problem running under Windows 7. The only one we've heard of is Chrome, but I was able to get Chrome to work on my version, so there must be something to that.
You know, so are we looking at this year, do you think? Are we in 2010?
Yeah, I think there is almost no doubt in my mind, based on the release candidate availability, that Microsoft will get this product shipped. They, in the past 30 days, have really named the new Office 14 product to Office 2010 and said, look, we're not going to get this out until January. And part of the issues around that were Exchange integration and SQL integration. But I think Windows will actually see on the normal, or what has become the normal, Microsoft schedule no later than November to the corporate open license people and in January. But there still continues to be rumors that the product could come out as early as September, and we know that hardware manufacturers have new generation hardware that involves touch screens and new generation touchpads to support that facility inside Windows 7. So the hardware manufacturers are ready, just like the hardware manufacturers were ready when Intel announced the new server chip at the end of March, the Nehalem chip. They had a whole series of tested and ready-to-go servers. Well, the hardware manufacturers are ready for Windows 7, too. They're just waiting for Microsoft to get the code out. So it could affect our buying in this year. If Windows is released early and you want to go down that path, it certainly will affect your buying by this time next year.
Okay. So, Randy, have you seen the articles? I've seen a bunch of articles on the business model with Windows 7 being different. They're going to have, you know, multiple versions of Windows 7, and so they can have a really cheap one to compete with, you know, those, you know, even a free version of Windows 7 basically going out, and then, you know, more expensive ones if you need different of the features come out. Have you seen those articles, and do you know how valid that is?
I have seen them. I believe it to be valid. I don't know if they'll have as many as they did with Vista 7, if you will, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they don't have five versions or so. And part of the issue there is that they still have to comply with the European Union ruling, so they have to be able to make an Internet Explorer free version and a Media Player free version, for example. But Windows 7 has native support to uninstall those applications while leaving the technical pieces, the DLLs, installed so other applications that use those will still run normally. So, yeah, I think there's going to be multiple different versions like we saw with Vista, but maybe not as many.
Good.
Randy, I have a different hardware question and issue because over the last couple of years I've noticed particularly Hewlett-Packard has a tendency to use Microsoft's new operating systems as a reason to desert whole lines of printers, simply not creating drivers for them. And I'm beginning to see now, again with Hewlett-Packard, an awful lot of problems. For example, some of their inkjet printer lines will crash Microsoft Word. And their workaround, the only workaround they've had in the last year for this, is for you to uninstall the printer driver, which seems kind of crazy to me. Are you seeing companies maybe holding back driver development, or maybe not going to the new Windows 7 drivers in order to deliberately force you to buy their hardware?
Well, that may be what's going on from a business strategy perspective. Technically, what I know is going on is the hardware drivers had to be rewritten for Vista, and that the hardware drivers are the same for Windows 7. So there were a number of vendors, HP and others, Canon, and we could name a number more, who actually chose not to go back and update drivers for predecessor models. One thing we saw in the HP Laser family was the universal print driver, which actually supported all their products all the way back to the LaserJet 2 and ran under Vista. But when you start thinking about the inkjet printers, many of those are installed with a management software locally, and there are applications, Intuit QuickBooks being another example of one, where the companies basically came out and said, look, this product doesn't run under Vista. Our intent is not to make it run under Vista. Therefore, we're not going to upgrade to run it under Vista. That would be like the QuickBooks 2005 and before versions. So we're going to see that. And Microsoft's official position, interestingly enough, is that to prepare for Windows 7, they still want you to run Vista. And I think that's really to help you debug all of these driver issues. So to date, everything that I've tried personally that ran on Vista runs under Windows 7. But absolutely, you're correct on that, Dave, that there have been things that ran on Windows XP and before that just weren't going to run under Vista, period. That typically was older devices like inkjets, like web cameras, like scanners, and so on.
Yeah, we ran into those issues here at our office. I went to Vista and left everybody else on XP, and so all of a sudden I had to buy new equipment, so I guess that was not so bad for me. But
yeah, I deinstalled Vista and went back to XP, so hopefully Windows 7 will be better.
Yeah, you know, I've been okay with Vista. I had some hardware issues that I had to upgrade for, but other than that, I think it's been pretty stable for me. And I like I've gotten used to the interface. It's a little hard for me to go back to XP now after getting used to the Vista interface.
And for preparation, there's no doubt that, you know, if it didn't work with Vista, it's not going to work with Windows 7, so I would not actually expect it to be better on those fronts. So whatever, if you tried Vista and had bad experiences before, you're going to have similarly bad experiences on the new operating system. Only real hope, though, is that you have, you know, some new equipment that is supported. But if you've got legacy old equipment around, you can bet there's going to be a number of it that's not supported.
So it sounds like our best advice here for small firms or those listeners out there is to kind of pay attention to what's going on the remainder of this year and then kind of see when this is going to be launched before they make decisions on what to do.
Yeah, that Windows 7 launch will really most likely put the decisions post-tax season in 2010 as opposed to something we have to deal with this fall.
Yeah.
So, again, I encourage people, if they've already successfully made the transition to Windows Vista, there should not be a major problem in moving from Vista to Windows 7. If you haven't moved to Vista yet for any reason, I wouldn't rush to Windows 7 until, as Randy says, after tax season.
Yeah, and Dave, your attitude on that is exactly right, with the caveat that we're, you know, now past another Microsoft discontinuance of Office 2003 and Windows XP support, and the backlash coming back again saying we really want to keep the support around longer. But Microsoft has now really gone past that deadline of April 14th.
Well, I'd like to pivot here a moment and talk a little bit about in the last couple of weeks in the news, CPA2Biz developed a relationship with Intact, a SaaS provider of accounting software. And I know, Renee, Bill.com, you guys have a relationship with CPA2Biz. Kind of fill us in on what's going on with this new relationship.
Well, you know, when we did our deal with the CPA2Biz team and the folks at the ACPA, it was clear that their focus was to help firms move the technology from the desktop into the cloud, the SaaS model. And I think the benefits of the internet, SaaS, cloud computing are pretty strong, and I think all of us here on the phone are believers of it. And so I think, you know, I understood that this was their model they were going for when they did our partnership, and I think there'll be other partnerships in the future where they try to get more and more services that accountants need that are in the cloud that help them go from the desktop to the cloud. So I think they've been working on this relationship for a while, and I think it's pretty exciting. I think the opportunity for the accountants out there will be great because it'll create a new focus for the folks at Intact on smaller firms which I think will be good. Also, keep the same folks that they have on the larger firms, which already has got some great customers out there and great firm usage. So I think it's pretty exciting.
From what I can tell so far, I mean, Intacct has always had an appeal to larger organizations. But from what I've read into this, it looks like CPA to Biz is going to help them, and they're going to help each other in thinking about a new model for small firms in this environment.
Yeah, and that was part of the relationship that, you know, when we did our relationship with the CPA to Biz folks, there were certain things. For example, we built the on our product, we built a console so that firms could come in and manage multiple client relationships and be able to have branding for each of their clients. And figure out who gets charged, whether the client gets charged or the firm gets charged. All these things are driven by requirements, you know, for the CPA market and informed by the relationship with the folks at the CPA to Biz team. So I'm sure all of that is going on right now with Intacct, and we will start to see some of those changes come out over the next few months.
I don't know if it's been made public yet, so I'm certainly not going to be the one that does it. But from what I've seen so far, the pricing is going to be pretty competitive. For what other small firms would think they should be paying for this type of service, I believe.
Yeah, and I think what they've announced is that they will have a competitive price. So, and I haven't seen the final pricing yet, but it is obviously, you know, Intacct is an expensive solution in the direct market. So I think getting something that's more affordable for accounts to be able to use across all of their customers will make it a lot more greater adoption.
And I actually have seen the proposed pricing on it, and I think it will wind up being fairly attractive. And, in fact, just wrote for you this morning, Darren, I don't know if you've even looked at it, that if you have clients that need a little more sophistication than what you can get with QuickBooks, clearly the product has some merit there. And it's got some capabilities that the QuickBooks product doesn't have. So if you're trying to do a little more hosted type of approach, I love the product on that front. And, you know, some of the costing that's inside the product is very nice. And if you're trying to set up very consistent file structures for your clients, I think the product does a good job there. And it also has some very interesting integrations with document management with the Spring CM or CRM integration with Salesforce and some other players like Avalara in the mix. So, but the bottom line was the program is pretty well thought out to support CPAs in public practice to support their clients directly. And I think that's part of the reason the CPA to Biz folks wanted a relationship with Intacct.
Well, and we've seen, you know, over the last year with our relationship with CPA to Biz, a number of the accounting firms that we've been able to bring on, a number of them have been asking for, you know, more of the GL type interface as well to complement the bill.com. And so we actually have been working with Intacct since October on integration so that our customers, you know, have the complete two-way sync with Intacct. And a number of the large accounting firms that we're working with have requested that based on their belief in the Intacct system. So I think it'll be great, you know, definitely for the larger firms and more sophisticated firms. And then I think all the stuff they're working on to bring the product into a little bit, you know, simpler model will be really good. But it might, you know, we'll have to wait and see, you know, if that's ready in June or if it's going to take more time to get that out there.
Well, I think the real value that I'm seeing from our firm's perspective is this idea of getting away from having to deal with multiple versions of QuickBooks all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to get away from QuickBooks. I can't even fathom at this point. But getting away from version, I mean, having some version control would be really helpful for us. And in the clouds is also really beneficial to us. We do a lot of QuickBooks hosting right now, but you still deal with version issues as it relates to that.
Yeah, that is one of the challenges of the, you know, the desktop model. I think that's just one of the pure benefits of the cloud and SaaS computing is that you get rid of that, and customers are always up to speed. And, you know, any new features that get rolled out get updated immediately. So I think it's, you know, it'll be great for firms. I think it'll take you know, as it always does, it takes time for people to figure out how to use it for their own practice. But the CPA to Biz folks will make a difference in relaying that.
You know, no, Randy, you do a lot probably with CPA to Biz, but they seem to be really focused on hitting this small firm market and making a difference there. What do you know anything about that?
Well, they really are focused on that, and they're trying to select, you know, long-term players that are strategic, where they can actually add extra value, that are in, you know, small businesses and firms' interests, so it's kind of a mutual thing. There's a fair bit of evaluation about, are the tools in here really to help CPA firms and practitioners do the right things and so forth. So, you know, I think this is another good example, and Renee, you can't really say this for yourself, but I think that's part of the reason for the CPA to business relationship with Bill.com too. The tool just makes sense for both the practitioner and the clients. And so I think they've been trying to make smart decisions along this line, and I think there'll be more behind this one too.
Well, and they've done, and they have a tremendous, resource just in the firms that they, that they work with every day, and they are hearing consistently that these are the things the customers want. So first they wanted, a way to manage their bills, and then they want a way to actually do the accounting. So it's all driven by customer data and customer usage. So it should be good, interesting.
Good. Dave, I was going to throw this one out to you. I've been reading a lot. I bought, tax season ended on Wednesday, so I went to Barnes & Noble and bought magazines, which is what I did for the last 3 or 4 days, is just read about things that weren't related to the tax code. So that was kind of fun. And in the back of all the magazines that I read, there was an ad for the new Verizon Hub, which I've seen on TV as well. It's kind of a home phone solution. Tell me what you know about that and what you think.
Well, first of all, it's really not a new product. It's been out there for about 2 years, but it's been quiet and in the background. It's actually Verizon's first foray into a voice over IP phone, because it doesn't run off the phone network. You have to have a broadband connection to run it from. It's a nice looking unit. But I have some major criticisms of it. The video is not that strong. It does require a separate broadband account, and then Verizon does you another $35 a month on top of that. And that, with the $200 upfront expense of the unit, it frankly just doesn't have enough bells and whistles to justify that kind of cost. There are any number of good voice over IP phones on the market that would do a better job, or frankly, you could just run voice over IP software through a laptop for not much more money than that and get so much more. So from an economy standpoint, I just don't think it's a good value, and I don't see that it's as useful as perhaps it can be. It has some limitations, too, in that you can only use it with Verizon. In other words, you can send and receive text messages, but only to a Verizon phone, not any other network. And when it comes to viewing videos on the unit, well, they're the videos you can download from Verizon, not just any YouTube videos. So a lot of limitations and very high cost. I'd take a pass on this one.
So you have to have a separate broadband. So if you already have your broadband, your cable connection, let's say, to your wireless network at home or something, you got to have a separate connection for this?
Well, no, but you're going to have to run it off of that connection as well. But if you're running it off of that connection, they still want to charge you an additional $35. That's almost as much as the cost of a broadband connection these days.
Yeah. Yeah, what other good solutions are out there for the same sort of thing? Do you know anything offhand?
You know, I haven't taken a look at that market for a while, but I think it's probably time to go back and do that, because I know there are several companies, Cisco, of course, being one of the biggest, that's jumped into voice over IP, especially for small businesses. I'll go back and take a look at it maybe for our next next session, because I think if you're a small business, voice over IP is the way to go.
Yeah,
sure.
And, I had actually seen in a T-Mobile store in Philadelphia a similar system to the Verizon system recently. But we also are seeing players like VoSky and some others trying to do some of the Skype to PBX integrations, and of course we've had Vonage and some other players there. But I do believe that we're getting close to offerings for small businesses that can either be hosted or are very inexpensive to put in-house, that can also integrate with a lot of these public service offerings. So, Dave, you might recall it's probably been 2 years since we talked about this last, but making sure that the internet transport is kept open and that not certain classes of traffic are billed separately or restricted is part of the game to play here. But if you can begin picturing, I've got good high-speed internet, and it's now getting to the point that the voice is easy enough to integrate, that's where small firms have got to look to go in the future.
Yeah, I agree.
It's interesting. Have you guys been following the, eBay's role spinning out of Skype? I mean, Skype to me should totally be in this space, and they've got the scale to be able to do it, but they've done very little in the small business market.
Yeah, and in fact, I have used it very extensively over the last 90 days for video conference calls and for multi-way voice calling, a conference call, if you will. And I don't mind saying that on Friday, I was on a standard wired line traditional conference call with four people. And after that, the very next call I did was a five-way Skype voice conference call. And the Skype quality was so much better than what I got off the wired line solution. I was just actually appalled that the free service was actually better than the fairly well-known, sophisticated conference calling service.
Right. And I think that, it's interesting that they're spinning it out, because I think the small business market, is where there's just a huge amount spent on phone systems.
Yeah. But we've also found so far that it looks like the Skype application on the iPhone running wirelessly is not performing very well. So there's still a lot of difficulties in getting the technology implemented cleanly. And so we don't want this to sound easy, but it is actually to the point that the voice over IP wired systems, like I use a Phonality TrixBox in my own operation, they're really very, very competitive, actually in many cases less expensive, and I think better quality than some of the traditional KSU and PBX-based systems.
And I've been an advocate for a long time. I will not ever travel overseas without Skype. It's just it's such an essential part of your toolkit if you do any international travel.
And the version 4 that was published in March was a major step forward in both voice quality and video quality, I thought. And again, probably Dave, like you, I've used it for a lot of years, but I was just amazed at how big of a leap version 4 was this year.
Well, we used it when we opened up the office here. We did use it, probably exclusively for the first year, but then we ran into things that we need the phone system to be able to do from a customer support perspective, and they just didn't really have those features in the product, and it was clear that they weren't, going to try to build those. They were going to continue to focus on the consumer market, which makes sense in some respects, but I think from a revenue perspective, they could charge businesses a fair bit. I mean, we all know what phone systems cost, and I'm sure firms are spending a lot of money on the phone system that they have, and it would be pretty interesting if there was a really great, web-based, SaaS solution, again, that you could basically have your phone work from anywhere that didn't cost you that much money.
Yeah, and when you look at Skype's offering of $3 for unlimited calls across the U.S., that's pretty inexpensive per month, but we need that integration into the regular business system. And I think you're right, Renee. They're really focused on the consumer market so much. I think they're not looking at the opportunity of the business market.
So, Dave, my daughter is going to study in Greece all summer. Should I get a Skype account for her to communicate with us?
No question about it. No question about it. Because here's what you run into overseas. You have no idea what the national rate is going to be from country to country. I will not trust prepaid calling cards simply because attempting to use them, first of all, you don't know who the vendor is, and you have little or no idea of whether or not they're making use of your data or whether or not the credit card you use to pay them is going straight to the Russian mafia. Just too many problems with it. She's going to be studying there. She's going to have a laptop. Chances are pretty good she's going to have a broadband connection with that laptop as she studies. I'd go Skype all the way. It's so cheap.
Good deal.
Darren, I have a question. Is it possible that I can get adopted by you? I want to go study in Greece also.
Well, the only reason I let her do it is because I get to go pick her up and bring her back.
Well, we're looking forward to being in Athens with our family this summer as well, so it must be the Greece year, I suppose. But I would tell you that on Saturday I did a two-way video call to my daughter in Bath, England. She was up in the Wales section right now on her European tour this year. And we also cut over from a two-way video call to a multi-way family call, all on Skype for voice conferencing. So it is exceptionally useful, and we've been doing it the entire time she's been gone. And it is hard to believe from a business perspective, but in developing our K2 materials over the last 120 days, I have routinely video calls on Skype to other authors like Dr. Bob Spencer or Brian Tankersley and so forth. And it is hard to picture how much additional information you get from the video in just a normal conversation like we're having now.
Good deal.
Hey, Darren, I have one other thing I wanted to throw out there. Conversation we had, we talked about the iPhone apps and just general things that are going on out there. And I just noticed that, on Apple's website, they're counting down to the number of billion downloads. So they're up to like 990 million downloads of iPhone apps at this point. So just as a kind of a, round out to the conversation last time, this stuff is changing the world and people are going to be doing it all the time.
Oh, no doubt. I was watching a video on 3.0, the newest release. Is that out yet? The newest release of the iPhone software?
It has gone to developers about a week ago, but the phone itself, not till June. So,
okay.
Yes, it's out, but not for public consumption.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be pretty neat. I went to Apple.com. You can watch the video on it, and it's pretty worth watching. So, well, gentlemen, we're out of time today. I want to thank you for spending time. I think we had some good topics today, and we'll look forward to getting together next month.
Thank you.
Sounds
good. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106, or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.